All right. Good afternoon. Good morning. Good wherever you happen to be in the world. Thanks for joining us on this Friday. It's I'm based on the East Coast, so it's about 5 o'clock here. Just waiting for Anatoly to dial in, and then we'll go ahead and get started. Just a few things beforehand. As always, these are recorded, so you can play them back afterwards. And if you have questions about some of the Solana tech updates we're going to be talking about here, the best place to drop them in is the Twitter thread on my account. Alternatively, you can shoot it to me over DM, and I'll make sure the questions get in and connected. So, give us a few minutes to get totally dialed in, and then we'll go ahead and get started. Anatoly, welcome.
How's it going?
Good. How about you?
Good.
Sweet. Give it a few minutes for folks to get connected in here. While we're waiting, I want to plug that if you're in New York, you should come to the New York Hacker House next week. And if you're not in New York, there's a world tour of hacker houses, so you should check them out and see which ones you might be able to get to. There's a lot of cool stuff getting built and a lot of just chance to hang out with people in person and, learn more about what folks are building in the ecosystem. Right, let's go ahead and get started. Anatoly, do you want to start with quick updates, or is there anything else you wanted to chat about before diving into that?
Yeah, quick updates. 1.9 is basically getting released on mainnet. I think right now we're still looking to see how stable it is. I think we're looking to see like maybe up to 20% of nodes on 1.9. The initial release, like 1.9.9, had a people reported some weird behavior. So there's a fix that was released. So 1.9.12 should resolve all those problems. But we still want to see maybe up to 20% of nodes on 1.9, while everyone else should stay on 1.8. And once that's stable, then mainnet will fully migrate to 1.9. What 1.9 brings is the kind of the most important changes that are relevant for devs is the compute budget. So you'll be able to request more capacity per transaction. So up to 1.4 million compute units that you can use all in one instruction if you wanted to. And it also has the additional fee parameter, so users can specify a fee to bump their priority. But this isn't as useful yet because the actual prioritization scheme isn't live yet. So that's I'm hoping we'll land in 1.8, 1.10. And testnet is at 5% on 1.10. And if that seems stable, that should roll out fully, hopefully maybe this or next week. So 1.10 has the quick changes. All the server side stuff is done from what I can tell, but we need to kind of stress test it and make sure all the client side changes are rolled out as well and are stable. And the client side changes include the forwarder paths from when an RPC node submits to a lead to a node and that node is not the leader, that thing forwards along to the leader. So that's that piece is still, I believe, in progress, but if not getting close to being merged. So I don't know. I'm optimistic to 1.9 with Quick, like in about 3 weeks.
Nice. So you mentioned a few things there. One is that there's some more developer options coming in, like the compute budgets. From a developer standpoint, like what do they have to do? Where can they read about, these changes if they want to look at implementing them?
There's docs on the compute budget. So this is if you're. You can just search in the docs for compute budget. If you're requesting, by default, an instruction takes 200 cycles. So That's the maximum an instruction's allowed to take in terms of compute units. So if your transaction has programs or instructions that take up way more resources than those 200 compute units, you can request for a bump, basically increase how much compute units you want. What's interesting too is you can also decrease the amount that you're going to use and say that this particular transaction is only going to use a very small amount of compute. And that will become useful later on when prioritization will be based on how much additional fee is the user paying for how little of resources is that transaction going to use on chain. So in for trading, like if you have a marketplace that is extremely, saturated with trades and you want to get ahead of the queue, this is where you'd want to minimize the amount of compute you're requesting from the system, and because that will effectively increase the fee divided by compute units value, which is what's used for prioritization. So the most expensive compute units will try to be prioritized first. So you can kind of control that in two ways, right? One, by paying more, but more importantly, is we want devs to tell the system ahead of time the minimum amount that this thing is expected to use. Because if that information is perfect, then block producers can pack these blocks in the most efficient way possible.
Got it. Is there, so you mentioned that transactions that have the highest compute budget will be packed first. Is that accurate?
The ones that are paying the most for the compute that they're using will be packed first. But that should only impact a specific account that is saturated, because the packing isn't exactly linear. As soon as you have this bucket, these accounts, you can kind of think of them as buckets. As soon as one bucket is full, you still have plenty of block space left, but you can't add any more transactions that write lock that account. Because the 12 million limit for that account has been reached. So all the other transactions, again, in the same kind of prioritization scheme, where if they were paying higher or more higher per compute unit, will be tried first. But because that particular bucket is no longer saturated, you effectively skip all the transactions that are would potentially write to that bucket. So the amount that you should be paying should only really be based on how congested all the other buckets are, or your specific one. In theory, in a perfect world, you have something like an IDO event or an NFT drop that's only touching a one specific market that should have nothing to do with like an unrelated, Serum USDT BTC pair or a Solana Pay, transfer.
So when you're talking about that, like without a mempool, how are those compute fees basically set?
This is where so the reason why Solana doesn't have a mempool is because mempools are kind of slow at high speed. So it's pretty tricky to build a different system that still guarantees reliability and is fair and has some ways to allow transactions to get through even under a flood of events. The way it's the intended design with Quick and everything else rolling out is that you have a some reliable connection to validators, including the leader, but any validator, that's kind of the important part. When you submit transactions to them, you propose transactions, hey, I have these transactions. That validator will pull from a bunch of streams in a stake-weighted manner. So if your RPC node has stake, some 0.01% stake, then whatever leader you're connected to will pull data from your node, guaranteeing that you will at least get your 0.1% of the bandwidth that that particular node has designated for receiving events from the outside world. Once those events are received, then that thing will order them based on how much each one is offering to pay for compute space. And then once that ordering is done, it'll start sorting them into these buckets and filling blocks based on whether the bucket is full or not. So it's almost like, I don't know, what's a good analogy? I always think of it as almost like a pachinko machine or a vending machine. You have a vending machine with a bunch of items in it. You can't fill a particular slot beyond its capacity, and then you have to start filling other ones. And this scheme, right, this kind of multi-headed queue is preserved across the block producer, but also when transactions are forwarded. So when you submit something to a validator, if it's not the leader, it's going to forward it to the leader, to the node it believes to be the leader. And the way it forwards it is that it's the forwarding setup, you can think of it as designed to prevent starving anybody by stake weight. So if you have some stake, you're not starved. And then prevent from any single set of accounts that are saturated and have extremely high fees from starving everyone else from being considered for inclusion into a block. So the goal of both of these is to prevent starvation happening.
And then so, but just kind of on the like, that was a really awesome overview of kind of how the whole system works from like a very tangible perspective. Like, there's a website that tells you how high gas fees are on Ethereum, and every wallet has a slider where you can choose how fast you want your transaction to go based on the fee market and stuff. Like, what would that like? I mean, I hate to say like, what's the API a
Got
developer
it.
hits, right? But like, what's the equivalent of that?
The way you can kind of estimate is you can look at, so a transaction has some time that it's valid for that you can continue resubmitting it. And you can kind of think of it as a TCP timeout window, and it's kind of close to that. It's, I think, roughly 40 seconds. So when you sign this transaction, you can actually look back at the recent history, the last 40 seconds worth of slots, and see, given the accounts that this transaction is writing, what was the how saturated were those accounts, and what is the the median and the smallest, the 1st percentile, the 95th percentile of the fees that people paid for them. And you should all basically, under almost all events, that's going to be the default fee without any additional, without needing to provide any additional fee. But if the network is saturated and you may need to bump it, that's kind of how you could look at that past history and decide, okay, I need to actually increase the fee.
Got it. So it's not necessary. So just to tease that out a little bit, in periods of high demand for a specific part of a contract, there's you actually may not know if you've paid enough until the transaction attempts to execute.
Well, because you can only look at past history, right? You don't
Yes.
know what the current what anything that's happening in the current moment. One interesting thing that is still a kind of an unknown, and we'll have to actually see how this performs, is, are people going to need to increase fees to get prioritized in this like queue before the block producer, or do they actually need to increase fees to get access to block space? Because of how like it's hard for me to tell which one is going to be true, because right now without flow control, you have these bots that slam the network with like 2 million packets per second, and in that environment, you're paying. You actually all you need is prioritization in that queue before the block producer makes a decision. Once Quick is there and there's some reasonable flow control, I don't know if that's going to be as important, or we'll actually start seeing, during IDOs and stuff, some real consistent saturation of one or two accounts.
So you brought up Quick again. Let's sort of dive in a little bit. Like, just Could you just give people a quick refresher on
Quick,
what the problem Quick is trying to address is?
Quick is a protocol that was built by Google maybe 8 years ago at this point, if not 10. It's you can think of it as like fancy UDP. It has a way to allow messages arrive out of order, unlike TCP. And it is able to verify the sender, unlike UDP. So it kind of has the benefits of both. So Solana was built on top of UDP, which doesn't have a way to verify the sender or tell them to back off or stop. And it was purely relying on hardware to do that kind of congestion control locally. And I guess it took us about a year and a half to get to a point where that wasn't sufficient.
Yeah. So what is the sort of, if you're looking at like Quick, what's the, you mentioned the state of implementation that is that it's rolling out on DevNet now.
On Testnet. So 1.10, yeah, 1.10 has the server-side stuff. I think we're close to having like the bench DPS client updated with it, and so we can start like every day. There's a bunch of scripts that do effectively denial of service on the testnet and slam it with transactions. So once those scripts are ready, and we see consistently that Quick works well and there's good performance, I think then that would be the signal to update mainnet to 1.10. So that releasing that is useful even without the prioritization, because really what we see like people being denied access to block space is not because blocks are being saturated. It's because of this 2 million packets that are hitting the leader that needs to filter through all of them before it gets to the useful stuff. Obviously, long-term, being able to prioritize with like we need a way for users to always be able to get their transaction in if they're willing to pay for the prioritization. That's clearly necessary for the long term. But right now at the current load, you know, that's just not, that's not really a problem yet. But the main issue is this like just stupid spam.
Yeah. And so in this model, where does spam get hit?
So because Quick has flow control, the sender that is trying to send 2 million packets per second, they will actually be prevented from doing so. So if they're staked and the validator, that particular node is configured to handle, I don't know, 100,000 packets per second as their maximum at the TPU, and that node has 1% of the stake, they will not be able to starve, the rest of the network will not be able to starve that 1% of the stake. They're guaranteed they're 1,000. If they don't use it, obviously somebody else can use it, but if some spammer is trying to send 2 million packets per second, they will not be ACT, and their stream will stop, and my 1% node will be able to send their 1,000 events through.
Yep. So in order for someone to do something similar, they would have to effectively control enough stake weight for the network to consider their transaction, their packets legitimate.
No, it's that, you know, all of these systems are run by volunteers, and, you know, validators basically configure their hardware. So if that particular validator has enough hardware to evaluate 250,000 packets per second, to consider that many to be included into blocks, then that's the bandwidth that they kind of decide to use for, you know, evaluating events. Then spammers can only use up to that many, but if I am staked, then spammers cannot starve my node. And that particular leader can then also decide, okay, these RPCs are on an allow list, and they also have X amount of bandwidth that I'm going to to consider from them. So the whole goal is to prevent anybody from starving anyone else. And the limits were, the only place where we can actually assign those limits is if you're staked. So if you have some stake weight on some machine, then that gives you some guarantees that you're at least not going to be starved.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. I guess I didn't think about that, but you may have varying capacity to process on a block by, well, not block by block, but liter by liter basis based on the hardware configurations of it. Are you seeing anything similar to that in production now, or is this just
Yeah, I mean,
the future where demand is
the
higher?
top stake nodes tend to run bigger systems. Kind of the lower entry ones run the minimum requirements. And that's fine.
So,
So
we had a question come
there's
in,
at
which is.
least a nice incentive there in theory that the bigger pipe you have to process external events, the more higher paying transactions you can find, and therefore make your blocks more profitable. So there's some incentives there. We'll see if how those play out.
Yeah. We had one question about, there's a mention in the quick documentation about support for larger transactions. Is that
Yes.
talking about increasing the current size of
Yeah.
the max size of bytes
Yes,
or?
in bytes. That is potentially, I don't want to promise that it's going to land at 1.10. There's people working on it. It's tied too quick. It's kind of a pain in the ass to thread this additional parameter effectively through, like the variable size packets. It's like in development on its way. So potentially in 1.10 as well.
Do you have a sense of what that increase would look like?
Yeah, it's basically doubling the packet size.
Nice.
What is it? 1280 is
And
the field right now, so it'd go to like 2560.
Totally. What does that translate into in terms of user experience?
It's more for devs. There's just some devs that want to send really big transactions, or like some zero knowledge protocols need bigger proofs.
Yeah, because this is something we've heard some various feedback on is that there are some types, like some, I think someone was trying to, if I remember correctly, someone was trying to do a VRF on chain and they didn't have enough space in the transaction for it to do it in one.
Yeah, there's some zero knowledge proofs that just need more bytes.
Got it. Yeah.
This
And so
the this particular increase, I think, also the other thing that it gives is that because every call needs to specify all the data dependencies, all the accounts. So having twice as many, you can now have twice as many accounts. And there's some folks that have been like some app DeFi applications that want to do very weird, crazy, like lock all the markets and do a bunch of fancy like DeFi stuff all in one atomic transaction. It's usually like, I guess
I like
from
the
a high
sound of
level, when
that.
you have like something like Mango, and you have a ton of different collateral in the same risk pool. It might be, in some ways easier to lock all of those pools at the same time to manage the risk. Daffy can probably, Daffy was the person that keeps asking me about this. When can they use more accounts?
That's a really interesting idea. I hadn't thought about it that way. So, in terms of other changes or performance improvements or new features for devs coming in 1.9 and 1.10, I guess also first off, congratulations. We've gone to 1.10. We didn't wrap up to 2. We we played the multi-versioning game. But like, what's coming in there that looks interesting to you, or you think people should know about that maybe haven't been following along quite as closely, but like are generally excited about 1.9, but don't really know what's in it?
So I think once I mean the one of the biggest things that that's important to validators is the disk based accounts index. So people that are running 110 that want to experiment on like RPC nodes should enable it. We think that in theory, validators should be able to run under constant 64 gigabytes of RAM, no matter how big the account set gets. So like billions of accounts in theory. The goal there is that if that works, it means that validators can add more SSDs and the network can grow without changes to the code or to really to the spec. There's still, I think, unknown how the market for block space for state space should function. I don't think the setup that we have right now with rent is the most efficient way to do it or the most fair. If people have been thinking about how do you pay for on-chain state and what's the best way to run those markets, shoot me a message in Discord or just post an issue in GitHub. Definitely would love to think about that, to talk to folks who've been thinking about that. So that's really important because the more people go on chain, the more state we need. And right now that was limited by the accounts index and RAM, but that looks to be like done and awesome. So if all validators run under 64 gigs of RAM, and in our tests, this thing has been stable with was it like 8 billion accounts using, I think, about 4 terabytes? It's pretty efficient.
That's pretty impressive.
That and one of the related changes to that was incremental snapshots, which improves speed-up time. So
Yes.
obviously, if you have this massive giant state, how do you deal with fast boot and all these other things? And the incremental snapshots is the change that makes it easy and fast.
I have some other questions around like data availability tooling too, and stuff like that that's coming. Unless you have, do you have more things we should touch on in from just the pure validator operation side of things?
No, but happy to answer any questions people may have.
Cool. Yeah, just as a call out, drop your DM me your questions, drop them in a thread on the spaces, whatever works for you. Try and get through a bunch of them. So one of the questions that I kind of had is like, we're seeing more and more demand for, I would guess I would call it like ancillary data availability tooling. So whether this is like archival nodes, indexers, like Metaplex recently published the idea of on-chain collections for NFTs, and you may want to put a query out that's like, get me a list of all of the NFTs from this collection that are currently for sale and that sort of thing. I've seen a few projects and a few pieces of code that are working on sort of improving that data availability layer. Is there anything you want to talk with about some of that work?
Yeah, so there's an Accounts DB plugin. I don't know if it's been renamed yet, but that's what it was called initially. And it allows your validator to stream, like you can write a custom hook in your validator and stream a bunch of events into Postgres. And you can actually filter at that point right in the validator when it's booted up, filter and structure the data to the schema that's application specific. You can run m out of n, I different writes. So you have, five validators that are all writing to the same Postgres to give you some redundancy there. And it's all directly structured into the schema that your application needs. And then point your web APIs to that database. And that's the most efficient, I think, fastest implementation, I think, of structuring data indexing that you can do. CoralCube.io, I don't know if anyone's played around with that. That was built on top of Accounts DB.
Ah, okay. That's where they're getting that from.
Wait, what was that
CoralCube.io. They're kind of in.
The marketplace
Yeah,
aggregator?
they're indexing every NFT on chain with like, sub-second updates.
Nice. This is sweet. Great.
And if you guys are also following along, I'm threading a lot of these references in the tweet thread, so you can find them later too. is there anything else that you're seeing a need for in the ecosystem around that more specific tooling? Stuff like the accounts DB plugin and ability to pull data into Postgres?
I don't know. More Dune dashboards or more
a what?
More Dune dashboards or chain crunch or
more Dune dashboards.
So I'm curious about like what I'd love to see more of like analysis of the data and comparisons between Solana and like something that if you can't compare those data sets to like Ethereum or other chains. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. Let's see. Let me check and see what other questions we've got here. Oh, I know there's been so there's definitely been some questions around like how things like this prioritization or these changes that are coming, you know, beforehand, I think we were talking and the engineering team was and a lot of the core contributors were talking about fee reductions on the network and the way that would move over time. Like to dive into a little bit, like when we're talking about now variable fees coming in, is this still going to basically drift off the existing token economics model where 50% of those fees are burned?
Yeah, that's kind of basically the model. You know, 1559 is a pretty good approach. And I don't know if anyone's come up with anything better. And we're totally happy to like, you know, look at every proposal out there. But you need some, I think, some component that is burnt that provides security from somebody that is a validator that's earning rewards from spending those rewards on spamming the network indefinitely. Like those attacks are not very likely, but at some point you get big enough that they are. So having some percentage burned helps guarantee that that's nearly impossible to pull off, at least for a very long time. And in my mind, like what I think might be a better, somewhat better, or at least more accurate approach than what 1559 does is pricing the transactions based on an estimate of what they physically cost to the network. So what's the current cost of bandwidth and validators, and having that be the base fee that's always burnt, and then the additional fee parameter goes directly to the validator. But right now, the way it's implemented is just simply 50% is burnt, which is a okay approximation.
Yep. Yeah, because I guess like part of the question there is like, what is that burn? Like, what's the function of that burn in the ecosystem and the value, right? Is it just about depriving the sender of a fee so that as you're talking about the incentive structure stays aligned, or is it actually the contentious and I think maybe misguided concept of protocol revenue?
I mean, like everything in the network is MEV. I don't think you can escape that. It's just, can you make it as fair and as, prevent anybody from getting starved? That's the goal, right? That's the goal of all these incentives. Is it possible to make the system fair such that nobody is getting starved unfairly? Those are open questions. I think what I really want to see is, like something like Jito Labs be where, and I, I'm pretty sure that's going to be inevitable. Where arbitrage pays for ordering in a block, like our bots are fighting over order, and what they care about is being first at any particular block, right? And that's a different market than even an account saturated or block space being saturated, where I just want to be included and I don't really care where in the block I'm included. So those are different marketplaces. So ideally, and it might not be possible, they're split such that one can have extremely high fees without impacting the other one. So I don't know if it can be split perfectly, but I'm pretty sure we can get, at least halfway there. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. So we had one question. We're kind of going to just questions that are coming in now. When should we expect the accounts isolation benefits to hit mainnet?
What do folks mean by
That's a great question. I was not sure exactly what that one means either.
that?
I think this is probably referring to the fee market specific contracts, but
So one that's
that's
a
110.
no, that's already there. They're already isolated. So the compute budget and like the way that blocks are packed, it's already accounting for any specific account being saturated. The main thing that's missing is for the user to be able to prioritize and get ahead of all the queues with a higher fee or by reducing the compute that they're using.
I think that's all of the questions y'all have thrown my way.
Some like application level work that's happening. Token 22, it's been like a collaboration between a bunch of projects. It's kind of a like a new standard that's ABI compatible with the previous token. That's coming. That seems to be getting really close. Some cool stuff that it should be able to do is like hook in the confidential like proofs, so you can hide the amounts that are being passed through token transfers. It's also reclaimable, so both the mint and the accounts, you can reclaim that memory, and that means you can Merkleize NFTs. So there's work being done to create like effectively zero cost NFTs, where it's just a Merkle root and a bunch of proofs to token accounts that aren't allocated on in the state machine. So
So,
you can mint
practice,
like,
yeah, like,
100 million NFTs with it in a single root.
so from a practical standpoint, I mean, obviously that there's a ton of use cases for that. What are the downsides of doing it that way?
Somebody has to store those proofs and keep track of them.
Right.
And that happens off chain, but that's somewhat solvable, but that requires infra.
Look at us getting into side chains.
Yeah, if we want to say it's a layer two or a sidechain, it's not quite that. I think
Yeah.
it's typically
No,
called a
it's
stateless
different.
accumulator.
Okay. Oh, yeah. We've talked about this before. Interesting model. Let's see, what else do we got? Ben, you got any questions?
Tully, what are you most excited about right now on the application layer side?
Stuff that I can't announce because
I knew that was what it was going to be.
Not because we're building it, but because these other teams are building it and they have me review it and it's really cool. I'm waiting for them to release it. I'm excited. God. Every day somebody shows me something really cool that they built. And I'm like, holy shit, this would have taken me forever.
I will say one of the coolest parts is definitely how little Solana Labs and the Solana Foundation is doing nowadays and how much of the cool stuff is coming from ecosystem teams and other developers who have been working in private for a long time and are, you know, the products are finally coming out and it's really exciting to see.
It's honestly incredible, like the growth of the ecosystem and where we are today from where we were at this time last year. I mean, at this time last year, the BD team was still me, Raj, Dom, and Scott, who's actually at Helium Foundation now. But we knew everybody in the ecosystem. We knew what everybody was working on. There was like 30 teams. We were in touch with all of them on a daily basis. And now it's like, it's absolute wildfire. New teams working on really cool stuff on a daily basis that I've never heard of before.
Yeah. It's a pretty wild change of events. And, one of the interesting things is like some of the, some of the other interesting pieces that have come up on this too, are just like the infrastructure side is so much more robust than it was, right? Like every developer had to run all their own infrastructure and now there's tons of solutions. Yeah. So this is an interesting question that just came in. And so I don't know if you saw this one about Octane.
What's Octane? Is that Render?
This is there are like projects experimenting with paying other users fees.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Like a postal system. Yeah. Like, do you think that's actually like an important component of the ecosystem in your mind, or like, what does that kind of look like to you?
I think it's cool. I don't know. I don't know if it's a blocker. I tend to believe that people it's not as important to reduce pain points as it is to build something that is so good that people are willing to eat some glass to use it. And then start worrying about reducing pain points. I don't know if we're at the point of scale, at the point where normal people would use crypto products because they're a little easier than before. But at some point that'll happen, right?
I guess that is kind of one of the things is that there's been this sort of thesis for a long time that at some point either crypto would get easy enough for everyone to just onboard as easily as downloading an app. And then the other thesis of it is just like at some point crypto would be valuable enough that everyone would figure it out. Do you think that those two paths are roughly accurate?
Yeah. And it's a matter, it's both are right. It's just which one's going to come first. I tend to be in the camp of let's build stuff that people use even if the UX sucks. Let's build things that are so good, so important, right, that people use them no matter what, and then optimize the UX, and hopefully that means that you scale to a larger audience.
Yeah, it's kind of funny though, because one of the things you often hear about Solana is that the UX is quite good.
Yeah, that's maybe that's the best way to get there. Is you build something that is good and then you optimize on the UX. I don't know.
That's interesting. I like that. Great. Well, I think we're just about set with questions for today. Yeah, I think that's here we go. Comments on application specific DB streaming got me wondering, what fraction of validators are run by application teams versus like generic or otherwise motivated validators? I don't think we have specific numbers on these, but like, do you have a model in your head about how that kind of breaks down between like teams or projects that are running a validator for their own use cases versus more of like the investor use case?
I think most are still just running validators for staking rewards, which is not as cool, I think, as people running it because they're trading and they want to be a block producer because that gives them more alpha, or because they want more stake because they want that information faster for better UX because their app has so many users. So that, like, I think we're still in this world where most people are running nodes simply for the rewards.
We are seeing it on at least the custody side, and now on the data side, people interested in running their own nodes just to get just that first point of contact with the inflows of transactions. I personally haven't heard of like application layer projects running nodes though.
I mean, they all used to, right? That was kind of one of the interesting things is like you roll back to this time last year and like there weren't infrastructure providers available that they could just like go buy RPC services from. So they kind of all had to back in the I call it a year ago back in the day, but back in the day. Cool. Well, Anatoly, unless you have any final words, I think that's going to be it for today.
No words. I'm easy to reach on Discord or GitHub. So if you got questions, thoughts, shoot me an email or post an issue on GitHub or something.
Yeah, that is actually a good plug for GitHub. Like open source development is like I would say a deeply infectious mind bug for all the folks building in Solana. And so check the GitHub. That's where you'll see the actual proposals, the actual code issues open. Like Discord's awesome for debate and comms and back and forth on it, but like I'm personally finding that like I'm staying up to date on stuff through the GitHub more than I am the Discord at this stage. So just a shout out to make sure you check that out too. All right. Well, Anatoly, thanks for joining us today.
All right, see you guys.
See you.
Bye.